You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The Wire.
Hey, Connor.
Hey, so we're going to talk about Jamal Khashoggi because everyone's talking about Jamal Khashoggi, so I think we should give our little insight. But I'm not going to go over the kind of the timeline of events of his disappearance because that's been kind of covered extensively. But I guess for those who haven't heard, I mean, the brief overview is that he entered the Saudi consulate in Istanbul in Turkey to gain proof of divorce so that he could marry his Turkish partner. Mm. He was a divorce man. He just needed a bit of paper, as we sometimes need from our embassies if you're a foreigner in a foreign land. The problem was that Khashoggi was not a political dissident. But it wasn't just because he was a political dissident and because he was a Saudi liberal. It was the fact that he was also incredibly well-connected with the Saudi royal family and the Saudi economic elite. So he not only had a global platform that people actually listened to in the Washington Post and Saudi Arabia's most progressive newspaper, but he also knew a lot of these people and potentially had a lot of dirt on them. So they had a problem. And it's actually been compared, if you know your ecclesiastical history here, to when King Henry II killed Archbishop of Canterbury Thomas Becket in 1196,
1900,
in the sense that it was done by an author in the Telegraph, they said, with the quote saying, "Who will rid me of this turbulent priest?" said by Henry II, and I think that's very similar to what Mohammed bin Salman has done with Khashoggi. Anyway, the point being is that he was very well connected. He was taken into the Saudi Arabian embassy, and there have been varying stories from Turkish authorities and Saudi authorities, but the consensus between the sources generally seems to be that he was unfortunately hacked to death alive inside the Saudi embassy. There might have been an interrogation. We don't know. The Saudis say there was, and it was an interrogation gone bad. But all the evidence at the moment points to the fact that this action was premeditated. They knew he was coming in for that paper. They didn't know where. They just knew that he needed to not leave a Saudi consulate.
Right.
His political opinions first, just very quickly. He believed that Saudi Arabia should liberalize. He believed it should go back to its pre-1979 days. He thought the crackdown from 1979 onwards on women, on political right activists, was a mistake, and that Saudi Arabia should do a U-turn and kind of follow what Iran followed in the 1950s and 60s, where it was still an Islamic state, but it was sort of liberalizing, becoming gradually more democratic, and, you know, was opening up a bit more to the rest of the world and letting in outside influences and ruddy, ruddy, rah, so that people weren't kind of locked off as they are now in this kind of super extreme Islamic state, which is kind of Saudi Arabia today. He formed a progressive paper, but he only last year faced enough pressure from the Saudi government to leave. And that was as a result of this new prince coming in and gaining power. He's someone who's put in some few liberal reforms, but is definitely being described by Saudi commentators as drunk on power, someone who knows he is absolutely in charge, very well aware of it. So why has the US response been so pathetic is the nub of it. Well, it all points to Israel, as ever with these issues. It all points to Israel. US supports Saudi in a sort of enemy of my enemy is my friend situation. The Saudis support Al-Qaeda and ISIS. They're fighting Iranian-backed rebels. And Iran, coincidentally, also supports Hamas, the PLO, and Hezbollah, who are all threatening Israel. Essentially, from a US foreign policy standpoint about the Middle East, you have to remember Israeli integrity is key. Why is it key? Well, it's not because of the Jewish lobby, as everyone thinks in the US. It's not, you know, the common assumption is that there's the Jewish community there is incredibly wealthy. They have a lot of political clout. They've got AIPAC, who are this huge convention that all the politicians go to, and it's not them. It's Christian Zionists in the Bible Belt. So they are huge voters for the Republican Party. There's midterms coming up. Donald Trump needs all of those people in the Bible Belt evangelicals to come out. And the reason they support it is because they believe that in the end times, Jesus Christ is going to come down from the heavens in the second coming onto Israel. And if it's controlled by, air quotes, heathens, then Jesus will surely lose the Battle of Armageddon. And that's why Israeli integrity is key to US foreign policy. So that's why the US have been tiptoeing around the issue, essentially just for US political survival for individual politicians. They don't really care who they ally with. They don't care who, how awful they are, just as long as Israel's safe. That's all that matters. And that's why the response to Saudi Arabia has been lukewarm. The director of the CIA is going to Saudi at the moment. To Turkey at the moment to investigate the issue. We'll see what comes out of that. I'm not really too hopeful. As for Europe, I'm going to kind of finish on that, maybe. As for Europe, there's been a very lukewarm response there, and not only because Europe has economic interests in Saudi, but also because it kind of follows the Israel thing from a position, different position of kind of still a collective guilt there as to protecting Israel, what happened in World War II, right, with the Holocaust, which undeniably was absolutely terrible. But unfortunately, the side effect of that is it's led to allying with Saudis, turning a blind eye to illegal settlements, etc., etc. The question I would pose, though, to Europe about that is that the Serbs faced a similar threat to their existence in World War II at the hands of Croatian fascists. And yet Europe didn't turn a blind eye as a result of that to Serbian aggression and Serbian genocide in the 1990s. So I don't understand. I still don't understand how it's different with Israel in that respect. Like, we've never given the exemption before that an atrocity to a people gives them a free pass to commit atrocities themselves. So I don't understand the difference with Israel. I think that's something that confuses me quite a lot. And I think in comparison, the Germans or the British in the 1990s had allied with the Russians in order to protect the Serbs on that basis, because of their historical sort of suffering, allowing them to commit what they did. I think there'd be a lot of more raised eyebrows around the world. So it's all a big geopolitical mess, basically, is it? It's a enemy of my enemy is my friend thing. Basically, what everyone's wondering is, A, is Mohammed bin Salman going to be the person who brings down the Saudi political establishment or is cut off by the Saudi political establishment, takes a whole load of people down with them for alienating the West? And will the West alienate Saudi Arabia? Will NATO and Europe and America turn on Saudi and say, no, we're not going to do business with you if you're killing journalists? And not only that, but journalists who are foreign residents around the world, how can we possibly square doing business? Canada, Australia, and New Zealand have already made that very clear. I think New Zealand has taken a stand in the past of not going to Riyadh before, I believe.
Right.
And
but I think it kind of goes further than, do we do business with them? I think it's more kind of like in the face of when people are treated like this for speaking out when they should. Like, we all need to make a noise about it.
Absolutely. And we shouldn't be letting... there's a lot of this kind of real politic sort of thought, this kind of political realism of thinking, that's the way of the world. We've got to deal with bad guys. That's just how it is. But you can choose when to deal with bad guys and when you don't want to deal with bad guys. And I can understand why we would have supported Saudi Arabia in the Cold War, maybe, because they were... anti-communist at the time. We didn't know when communism was the Soviet Union was going to end, and they were nuclear armed and rah rah rah. But nowadays, now the Cold War's over, and that it just comes across more and more hypocritical as the years go on. 100%. It really does.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.